On this edition of Our Town, I have the pleasure of speaking with Liz Atkinson, who is the RN manager, and Deb Suggs, who was an RN, now is a nurse practitioner with in-home health care. How are you both doing today?
Doing great.
Good.
All right, good. Well, let's talk about hospice, because that's what we're here to talk about. And I know that a lot of people have a lot of different ideas of what hospice is. So I think the first thing we ought to do is kind of get maybe a description or a little kind of a little background to what that is. Who wants to take board of that? Deb?
So I know a lot of people think that hospice is for people when they are really right at the end of life. That is not what hospice is. Hospice is for your end of life, but we don't want to wait until the last few weeks of life. We want to get in quickly. So for people when they have received a terminal diagnosis, they're no longer seeking or no longer have the option of any kind of treatment for that disease process, and they're ready to just look at comfort and quality for the rest of their life. That's when they come onto hospice. That gives us a chance to get to know the family, get to know the patient, work with them, get to a good working relationship so that when the time comes that they are getting to that point where they're actively transitioning, we know what to do with the patient and we work with the family. We know what the family can handle, what we need, what we may need to do. We already have medications in the home. So it makes things much easier. And I know a lot of people just think that we come in and people die within a week or two. That's because that's how long they wait. So we are there as a support for the patient and the family and or the friends that are taking care of the patient. So it's a kind of an all-encompassing program. It is end of life, so it's a little different than the palliative care program that we used to have, in that the palliative care was for people that with those terminal diagnoses, but they were still getting treatments. So that is one of the requirements for hospices, that they either are no longer seeking treatment or the doctors have said that there's no longer any treatment that is going to be effective for their condition.
And again, you said you don't want to get someone with only a few weeks left. What would be the optimal? I guess with a terminal diagnosis, it depends on when they say there's no more treatment options available. That could be, what, a year even?
Well, the requirements for hospice, Medicare requirements, are that the provider says that in a normal course of events, if their disease progresses as the general population does, that they have 6 months or less to live. That doesn't mean that if they come on service and 6 months go by and they're still on service, that we're going to kick them off. We just have to continually reevaluate and say that, yes, they are declining. We have patients who have been on for one patient who's been on for almost 3 years, but he has had a very slow decline. He continues to decline, and so he remains hospice appropriate. And so that's the big thing it is best if their doctor gives us the referral, but if families or friends feel like a patient is getting close to the end of life, and they haven't seen a doctor, or they don't currently have a doctor, or whatever the circumstances are, they're new to the area, they can call our office and do what we consider a self-referral. We will look at their case and we will decide, and then our medical director can sign the referral saying that, yes, they're hospice appropriate, and then we go from there.
Liz, is the biggest detractor from people coming in a significant amount of time the fact that for some reason we in America don't really like talking about death?
Yes.
That's one of the big things.
That's one of the big things. People are afraid to talk about death. It's scary. It's taboo in America. And until we make it like as common and comfortable to talk about as what you watched last night or what you did over the weekend, it's going to be an uncomfortable conversation for many, many people in America.
Because as we say, nobody gets out of this world alive, right?
Exactly.
That's right.
So we ought to be talking more about it, talking more openly about it. Are there programs or seminars or that set up for people to get them into that place where they're going, hey,
actually, recently, Deb went to the Death Cafe at the library.
Yes. It was through the county. And they did, I think they've done another one since I went, and I don't know if they have any more planned. But it's a way of making death just something that we talk about. There was no structure, real structure to it. It was just a group of people, you came forward, got in small groups, and you just talked about death. Your feelings about death, your experiences with death, what you were afraid of, what you thought might happen, how you thought you might happen, deal with it, how you thought your family might deal with it. It was just a way of having somebody to talk to about it. Many of the people that were in the group I was talking about, they said, you know, this happens. Almost all of us have had this happen at some point, either a relative or a family member or, you know, somebody that we know that has died, but we can't talk about with our friends. If you bring up the subject, everybody wants to talk about something else. Nobody wants to talk about it. And yet it is something that, as you said, we're all going to go through it. Death is just as common as birth, and it's just a different stage of life. It's just something we don't want to talk about. It's even hard in the medical field. Providers are geared toward making you better. Everything in them is to make you better. It's really hard for them to say, okay, you know, let's stop. Let's stop chasing this. This isn't working. We're only making things worse. And let's just stop and consider all the options and lay everything out there. Some providers don't understand hospice very well either as part of the problem. And we are working on making, you know, getting that word out there. But it is very hard for people to talk about death and then to talk about death in their intimate group. So it's a little easier to talk about it as generalized. And then the closer and closer you get to yourself, the harder and harder it is to talk about. And that's one of the things that we're hoping we can change in this community, mm-hmm. is to make death a little bit more of a less taboo subject, one that people are willing to discuss in small groups, mm-hmm. Intimate groups, where it's much easier to talk about than in a large seminar. We could do seminars and community projects, but I feel like for some of those, we cover some subjects, but people may have questions and they may not feel comfortable asking those questions or talking about that issue with a large group of people where they're more likely to talk about with a small group. So I would recommend if people have a chance and they do another death cafe, that people get involved with it. I think it's a good way, mm-hmm. to get this topic out in the community so that people are comfortable.
This might be an ethical dilemma or a personal feeling that each of us might have, but have we done a disservice to our aged population by wanting to continue to extend life past, you know, a reasonable health place that we're at? Or is that something you guys don't want to really touch on?
I think it's really individualized. Mm-hmm. Some people, their goal is to live for as long as they can. So for those people, yes, look at everything you can. Other people are not as geared toward quantity of years as quality of years. Right. And for those people, I think we are doing a disservice when we're trying to push everything. You know, for them, we may be better served if we look at, okay, let's spend more time with your family. Let's let you spend more time doing the things that mean life to you instead of, okay, can we give you 3 more months? So if those 3 months are spent chasing after treatment after treatment after treatment, then what kind of quality of life did they get? And that's what's important to them is quality, not quantity.
Yeah, I think I'm in that aspect where as long as I'm healthy, mm-hmm. I'm good with it.
Right.
You know, but if I'm declining and, you know, I don't want to go through all that.
Right.
I just assume be gone. You know, why hang out and be miserable?
And there's a good part. I mean, you're with a good part of the population. Most people, by the time they reach their 70s and 80s and 90s, their feeling is, I've lived a good life. If I can't enjoy what makes me happy, then what is there to push for? And so that's part of what we do with hospice, is try to give people that quality of life. So we try to help them do the things that they like to do, give them, you know, the energy, or help them learn ways to maybe modify some activity that they've done so that they can continue to do the things that they enjoy.
Now, Liz, Deb touched on it a little bit about the difference between palliative care and hospice. With recent changes, palliative care has seen a big change, and a lot of people were concerned with what was going on. You said you wanted to mention a little bit about what's happening.
So with the, what do you call it, the dissolution, dissolving of palliative care, Dr. Kerner's program with Emily Pfaff is advanced primary care. So they're getting back into the facilities, as well as the getting out to those homebound patients. So those homebound patients aren't getting lost in the whirlwind of all the changes. And then we are getting more referrals because of they held a large census when they were with palliative care. They held all the facilities, the majority of them all, as well as a lot of our homebound patients, because we do have a very large aging population here in Florence. But they are getting back out there, and so those people aren't lost. So I know it was a huge concern for the community when they were reading all the changes in the newspaper and seeing in the news and on Facebook and all that, but they are still there getting to those homebound patients.
And wasn't palliative care a good support for hospice as far as those patients who would eventually become hospice patients?
Yes, we had a really good relationship with them where it was a warm handoff, whether a phone call with the palliative care nurse or the provider, or even a handoff in person saying, hey, this is going to be the hospice team. They're here to support you. You have 24-hour support with them 7 days a week. And it was a great relationship we had built with them.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have to rebuild that relationship with the in-home care folks?
No.
It's continuum of
Dr.
care.
Dr. Kerner and Emily Pfaff, it's the same providers, so we still have that strong relationship with them.
So people should not be concerned about that transition from one to the other?
No. It's still in the growth period with them, getting back out and getting reestablished and all that, but they're doing their work really, really well right now.
And Deb, I think you answered this, but is hospice care mainly in-home care primarily a point?
Primarily. We have different levels of care. Primarily, it's in-home. People are required to have their own caregivers. You know, we don't pay for the caregiving part of it. But that we do have people sometimes, if symptoms are really severe, we do have what we call GIP, which is when a hospice patient is in the hospital. We try to avoid that if at all possible, because that's not where people want to go. But it does happen occasionally. Very rarely. We also have a respite program. So if caregivers have an emergency come up, or they just get to the point where they are totally burnt out, we can put a patient. We have a contract with the hospital and with Regency both, whichever one's available. They can go in there and they're still receiving hospice care, but it's just what we consider routine care. They're just kind of taking care of them while we're giving the caregiver a bit of a break. And that can be for like 5 days at a time. And then they go back to their home. We do have patients in the facilities, but those are considered their home. So that's still considered home care. We don't pay for the caregiving part of it. So we work with the social agencies. If people have Medicaid and they need additional caregiving, then we work with them to get in place somewhere or get caregivers in the home. But that's not something that we cover. And most patients, when they come on hospice, they're kind of sick and tired of the hospital. They're sick and tired of doctors. They're sick and tired of the whole process. They just want to stay home and be comfortable. I think that we have done a disservice in the past by putting people in the hospital to die. It's a sterile, really unfriendly environment, as even though we try to make it as comfortable as possible. But people have a much more peaceful and comfortable death when they're at home, surrounded by the family that they want there, surrounded by their belongings and the things that are important to them.
Knowing that, does that change, well, you may already have an established approach, but does that change how you go into the home as far as, you know, I mean, you go in with your white coat and you know, your stethoscope on and everything and look, you know, that? Or is it more like, hey, I'm Deb, I'm coming in to see how you're doing, you know, just dress like a normal human being?
I wear my street clothes. I usually wear my lab coat and with my stethoscope because it's got pockets that I have to carry my bags around with me. But yeah, I go in. The first thing I do with a patient is most of the patients that are coming on to hospice, they choose myself to be their hospice attending, which is kind of similar to what, like if they were picking a specialist. So that means that I can go out and see them at the very beginning. And so I usually try to go out in the first couple weeks, if I can, get to know the patient. That's what I tell them. I'm here to get to know you, find out what's going on with them, see if there's anything more that we haven't done already that we need to do to keep them comfortable, get to know the family, and just let them know that we are here. Most of them seem to really appreciate the fact that they've have not only the nursing staff on available 24 hours a day, but that they have a provider who can actually, I mean, the nursing staff can say, okay, let's get an increase in your medication, but they have to get a hold of me first. So the patients have really appreciated the fact that now here in hospice, and I've only been doing this since the end of January, beginning of February, we have a provider now in our hospice department. And I only do hospice. So I'm available to the nursing staff and the patients Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, all the time. And that really seems to make most of them, I don't want to say happy, but almost kind of relieved that they know that the nurses aren't going to have to spend 2 hours on the phone. And before we had... We had Dr. Kerner and the palliative team was trying to do it for a while. And then we had our Eugene hospice team, providers that were trying to do it. And it's just hard because you have to, are they available? You know, are they in the middle of a visit? Whatever's going on. And it would just take longer to get a hold of them and get things figured out.
So logistically, it's much easier to coordinate with you here locally.
Definitely, yeah. And the other providers, because this was not their primary department that they worked in, they would only go out. Yeah, they would only go out and see the patients when they were required to by Medicare, and so most of the time, Medicare doesn't require me to see a patient until they've been on service for 6 months. So many of our patients never saw a provider because they would pass in that time. So because I'm only doing hospice, I can go out and see the patients a lot more frequently than they would have gotten if we didn't have the in-house provider.
Liz, from an administrative aspect of this, what are some of the needs that hospice experiences? What are some of the things that maybe the community could know that would help hospice be even stronger than it already is?
For one, we are all the way from Walport to Reedsport, to the edge of Winchester Bay, the north end. We provide the DME, the medications, the incontinence accessories, supplies, and everything can be delivered to the home. They never have to leave at all. And we are here to support not only the patient, whatever their family looks like, because families are different everywhere now. And we are here for them. We have a chaplain who is hilarious, and we have social workers, and we're here for them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
I can see the chaplain. I'm here all week. You know. It's
like,
anything else we should know before we finish? Or does that pretty much cover everything?
I think that covers
it. Yeah. We're here and we want to support Florence and all of the coast of Oregon.
Right. Deb Suggs is nurse practitioner with hospice, and the RN manager is Liz Atkinson. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
We'll have more of the July edition of Our Town coming up. right after the top of the hour and news.